If ever it happens that the sacred song, whereto both heaven and earth have set a hand, o'ercome the cruelty which keeps me banned from the fair sheepfold where I slept, a lamb, foe to the wolves that raven through the land, with different voice now, nor with fleece the same, shall I return, poet, and at the fount of my baptizing shall the chaplet claim, because into the faith that makes the account of souls to God I'm one then, for which worth Peter wreathed such a light about my front. Thus our Florentine poet begins the 25th book of Paradiso, in which St. James examines him on the subject of hope. Even at such a moment, even at such a sublime moment, and we're two-thirds the way through the final part of the comedy, Dante cannot forget Florence or the baptistry of San Giovanni, Il mio bel San Giovanni, as he calls it in Inferno 16, the place where he was christened. Baptistries were very important to central and northern Italy. Elsewhere, it was more common to place a font somewhere in the back of the church or the vestibule, depending on which period or which area. But in Tuscany, they tended to build a separate church next to the cathedral where everyone in the diocese was baptized. Hence, the special role that the baptistry played in the life of a Tuscan community. It drew in the people of the countryside who would come to the church to be baptized. It was a place of enormous affection, and people would, you know, to them, their hometown, whether it's Siena or Pisa or Lucca, their hometown is represented by the baptistry. Dante had already used the image of the sheepfold of San Giovanni to refer to Florence, the simpler Florence of earlier times. And the expression is very poignant here. At this very moment, remember, where he is being examined on his understanding of hope and what he can hope for. It is no travesty or blasphemy in Dante's mind to see in his own hope of returning to Florence a shadow of his hope for salvation. Now, and bear in mind, I mean, that so often in Dante, a concrete instance like Florence and its baptistry foreshadows a deeper reality. By the time he was nearing the end of Paradiso, Dante must have sensed the prospects for his return were dim. Earlier in his exile, when he was feverishly plotting a coalition between his own party, the White Guelphs, and the Ghibellines, the hereditary enemies of all Guelphs, he was a bit less sentimental about his hometown. In April of 1311, the exiled Dante wrote an extraordinary letter to his fellow citizens, warning them of the arrival of the new emperor. You who transgress laws human and divine, you whom the awful insatiability of avarice has led to be ready for any crime, does not the terror of the second death harass you, and that ye first and alone, dreading the yoke of liberty, nice phrase, have raged against the glory of the Roman prince, the monarch of the earth, and the ambassador of God? The tone of the letter is threatening, even hysterical. But recall, Dante had been eating the bread of exile and poverty for 10 years now. Whatever hopes of return he had nourished were dashed by the humiliating offer that some exiles could come back to Florence, but only if they admitted guilt by paying a steep fine. Of course, they'd taken all his property. He had no money. He was living as a mendicant, not as a willing mendicant, which really galled him, but poverty had been forced upon him. The poet's only remaining hope lay not in Florence itself, but in the empire, which, as he believed, was true heir to the Imperium Romanum and entrusted with responsibility for maintaining peace and justice in the world. Dante was probably present when Henry of Luxembourg was crowned King of Lombardy in Milan, and he virtually rubs his hands with glee at the thought of the ruin that is about to be visited upon his beloved hometown. In what will it profit you to have surrounded yourselves with